Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Super Tuesday has come and gone. The political roadshow has moved on from New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut now. So let's take a deep breath and a big step back and ask, was Super Tuesday good for democracy? So much has happened so quickly that it's hard to digest. 24 states rushed up their primaries to this week to be near the front of the line. You may have just learned for the first time about proportional allocation of delegates in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut for the Democrats, while the Republican primaries were winner-take-all. Which is better? Or about the difference between caucuses and primaries? Which is better for democracy? And how about allowing independents or uncommitteds to choose their party on primary day, which New York and New Jersey, I should say, and Connecticut have to different degrees, and many other states too? Who does this all really empower? Our phones are open at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Our comments page is open at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And we welcome three guests: Benjamin Barber, senior fellow at the New York think tank Demos and author of books including Consumed, How Markets Corrupt Children, Infantilize Adults, and Swallow Citizens Whole, published by Norton; David Epstein, political science professor at Columbia University; and Robert George from the New York Post editorial board and his blog, Ragged Thoughts. Welcome to all of you.
Good to be here.
Benjamin Barber, what hath Super Duper Tuesday wrought with 24 states and American Samoa so early in the process?
Well, Brian, what it's wrought is further evidence that the American primary system is broken in fairly fundamental ways. Most importantly, it's utterly unpredictable. They keep making changes and that have different outcomes than the ones intended by the people who made the changes. They last far too long. They're far too decentralized, which means state by state people make decisions, even though the party tries to control them, that don't really work. And they're also far too expensive. We've seen one candidate after the other running out of money, even, surprisingly, Hillary Clinton. So in many different ways they're broken. I think the most difficult part of the whole system is that they're far too long. Most countries do their whole primary and general election in a period of about 3 months. Wouldn't it be great if we did that?
David Epstein, can you put this in historical context, the whole idea of voter primaries rather than party bosses picking the nominees is very recent, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It came as a series of reforms after the 1968 convention 40 years ago in Chicago, as we well remember.
Democratic convention.
The Democratic convention, exactly, where there were riots, there was, you know, police beating protesters. Dan Rather got attacked, as we know. And so after that, and of course, the nominee that came out was not the who was George Wallace.
It's Hubert Humphrey.
Hubert Humphrey, thank you very much.
Helping to allow George Wallace to run as a third-party
candidate.
But Hubert Humphrey was not the progressive anti-war candidate that a lot of the party base wanted.
And there was a war issue then as well. And so after that, it was – and, of course, Robert Kennedy was assassinated during that campaign. It was a very traumatic campaign.
Right.
And afterwards, as Benjamin said, there was this feeling that, no, we needed to make things more small-D democratic. We needed to let the voters have more of a say. And so McGovern in 72 kind of instituted these reforms that changed things to these proportional primaries.
And lost 49 states.
Well, then, so the answer is, why are we keeping with that system all these years later when it certainly didn't serve the Democrats very well back then? And there's this constant tension between what's good, as you say, for the party, what parties want to nominate candidates, and this kind of more democratic approach.
So, Benjamin Barber, let me get back to what you said a minute ago, which is that there are sometimes unintended consequences from these things. What do you think the intended consequences of this Super Tuesday were?
Well, I think the hope was Howard Dean and his commission that set up the rules this year wanted, on the one hand, to take a little bit of the power away from two seemingly unrepresentative states, Iowa and New Hampshire, which seemed to privilege white voters and include early primaries in South Carolina, where a lot of African Americans voted, in Nevada, where a lot of Latinos voted, and then moved to a Super Tuesday. I think their intention was both to be more representative of the larger party and at the same time to bring closure on a Super Tuesday. Now, we know that some states, like Florida and Michigan, weasel out of that and decided to do it their own way and put their primaries early in ways that meant that the results wouldn't really count, at least not nominally at this point. But the hope was, I think, to get both a more representative primary and a primary that would be quite decisive. And, of course, that hasn't happened at all. And instead, we are now locked in what looks like a long-term battle. And Howard Dean, interestingly, who devised the system, has now been saying publicly, we've got to figure out a way to try to get a, quote, arrangement, mm-hmm. which sounds very much like backroom brokered politics again between the candidates, because the party can't withstand going into the convention without knowing who the nominee is going to be, going up against maybe a strong, unified Republican Party.
Oh, all this democracy, it's too messy. So that from the Democratic Party perspective. And Robert George, what about from the Republican Party's perspective? Well, how did Super Tuesday work for them?
Well, I think in the big picture, it did not necessarily work the way they had it planned. I mean, one jiggling of the schedule that they made was, or not a jiggling of the schedule, but a jiggling of the rules, was having more winner-take-all states in some of the big states, particularly those in the Northeast.
Including New York? Was that new for New York this year?
Which was relatively new for New York this year. And one of the reasons why that was done was actually to help out a certain candidate named Rudy Giuliani, who had turned out didn't even make it to the to Super Tuesday.
So it wound up helping John McCain, who the Republican Party in New York didn't even want on the ballot in the year 2000.
This is exactly right. However, I do want to say that I would have to say that I disagree, though, with the idea, though, that this process is necessarily broken. I believe in 11 of the 12 Republican primaries, we've had record turnout. I think in almost every single one of the the Democratic primaries and caucuses, they've had record turnout. And I actually think, I mean, I think that's good for the process. I mean, I think it is actually a good thing that young people have actually woken up and realize it's a good idea to be aware of what's going on and to get out and vote. And so I'm not necessarily sure that one should say that just because the process is messy, that makes the process broken.
Let's take a phone call. And it's Chris in Amityville. You're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Hi. My comment is that the early primaries, which compressed the campaigning into a very short time period and put a lot of the big states up front, makes it very difficult for any sort of retail politician to get a toehold. Ron Paul, fortunately, was able to raise a lot of money on the internet, but candidates who have merit can't display their merit. I've run for office, and it's almost impossible to meet a significant number of candidates in a big state like New York. And when you compress all the big states onto one Tuesday, it means that all the campaigning has to be done either through advertising mm-hmm. or through the media and through what the media says about the candidates.
And yet, thank you for your call. And yet, Benjamin Barber, when I hear calls for reform of the primary process, the most frequent one that I hear is to have four regional Super Tuesdays, which would still make it very hard for candidates to do this retail kind of politicking like we see in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Well, that's right, Brian, and it is a paradoxical system, and here's really the paradox. The more participation, the more local democracy, the less representative the vote is. The more representative the vote is, the more anonymous, the more through media and so on it becomes. And the result is places like Iowa, the caucus states, look on the one hand remarkably democratic. You see real citizens coming together, arguing, talking, moving to a different side of the room, saying here's who we like. And that is absolutely an emblem of democracy. On the other hand, it's just a handful of people, not representative of the whole country. But when you go to big regional primaries and a big Super Tuesday, a lot of Americans feel, even though it's a much more representative of the country outcome, they feel somehow they're lonely voices.
So that's the paradox.
More democracy means less democracy and vice versa.
And David Epstein, we have seen great interest in super-duper primary day, especially on the Democratic side. Maybe that's more a function of two popular candidates than it is the structure, but anything that increases turnout is good.
Well, it certainly is for a small D democracy. I'd say it's very hard to judge anything by what's happened this time. We are in terra incognita. We've never had a presidential cycle, anything like this. Remember, we started over a year ago. The major candidates have been raising money since then. We've had so many debates. We've had, you know, 14, 15, 16 debates already. And so certainly the smaller candidates have had a chance to get exposed since then. So it's true. It's been great to get people excited of the process. And that's part of what we like to do, get people involved. But the question is, what kind of candidates are going to come out of it?
Bill,
Robert,
go ahead.
You should keep in mind that if, say, we had a regional primary situation, you could end up having more of that retail politicking that the caller was discussing. Because, I mean, to the extent that there was a mini regional primary within the broader sense of Super Tuesday, you saw Mike Huckabee do very, very well. I mean, he swept the five southern states, and in fact, also nearly won Missouri as well. So going to a regional primary situation might not necessarily be a bad thing, and it could sort of blend both both the idea of the media campaign in terms of primaries, as well as having the more retail hands-on approach too.
We're asking, was Super Tuesday good for democracy? Is our current primary system good for democracy? With Benjamin Barber from the think tank Demos, David Epstein from Columbia University's Political Science Department, and Robert George from the New York Post editorial board and his blog Ragged Thoughts. And with you at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, and through your comments at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show. And Bill in South Plainfield is going to bring up another aspect of this. Hi, Bill.
Hi there. Yes. Yeah, I've worked on campaigns in the past. Like people said, New Jersey generally isn't involved in this. You know, going to New Hampshire and Iowa, you really get your feeling that you're in the process. I was really happy that I was able. My vote for Barack Obama and his 44% of the vote is going to be reflected in the convention. And I realize what people are saying, that, you know, there's so many people voted and now we have this sort of stalemate. But when you look at the nationwide vote that was taken, 47-47, and whatever the problems for the party, everybody who voted on Super Tuesday, you know, if they voted for one of those two candidates, is going to be represented in the convention.
It's certainly exciting when your state counts when it didn't count before. New Jersey's June primary from the past certainly disenfranchised the state. But you're also supporting the idea of proportional representation, I gather.
Yes, and I realize there's some problems with that. And the main problem is, okay, you don't have an outcome that's early on. You know, for sure, the main problem with the way things are working is each state is making its own rules as it goes along.
Mm-hmm.
If the parties want to be really part of this process in a good way, why don't the two leaders of the parties, Dean and the guy on the Republican side, get together for the next time and figure out a way, you know, whether regional primaries are 4 or 8.
Yeah.
Also,
well, let me leave it there so we can get some other people on. But you raise a few interesting questions that I want to get responses to. David, by the way, is it Epstein or Epstein? It's, Andrea Bernstein, our political director, is Stein, and I mess it up half the time. So David Epstein from the Columbia University Political Science Department. Proportional representation, proportional allocation of delegates by congressional district and so forth, or winner take all at the state level, is one better for democracy?
Yeah, so as the viewer said, that's exactly what you get. Your vote counts, not only in your state, but in your congressional district. And the lower the level, the more people feel that, you know, they're making a difference in the process. In New York, if it were winner take all, then, you know, nobody would have cared. But, you know, there's a lot of excitement.
Does anybody disagree with that?
I sure disagree with it, Brian. Yes, yeah, Benjamin Barber.
Ben?
The problem is it's more democratic but far less decisive. That's the reason our national system is single-member districts, where if you win a majority, you win it all.
Why is decisiveness good for democracy?
Well, because we need outcomes. I mean, even Howard Dean is saying if Hillary Clinton and Obama go down to the convention still bickering, the country divided, their supporters rancorous with one another, we could have an outcome for the Democratic Party that was disastrous. The systems around the world that use proportional representation instead of single-member districts and winner-take-all are systems like Italy. where you have lots of parties represented. Everybody feels their party's there. They've got about 16 or 18 parties in the parliament, and you have a turnover of government, no continuity, no stability of government. So, and that is more democratic. I acknowledge that. I'm the guy who really loves that kind of local democracy, but that's the paradox. The paradox is that you feel you're better represented, but you don't get decisive outcomes. And in the modern world, we need decisive government, decisive outcomes. We have to know who our candidates are. This is not a system that permits that to happen.
Can I put it a slightly different way? The question is whether you're looking for democracy within the parties or between them. So you could have very democratic processes within the parties in the nominating process and then elect somebody who loses 49 states. And so if the idea of a party is to elect someone who will win, that's what they used to do. If you want probably the best system or the best quality candidates happened in the 18th century, 19th century, the House delegations
George, is the idea to nominate somebody who will win, or is the idea to nominate somebody who reflects the values of the members of the party, even if they'll lose?
That is the tension. I mean, that's the tension you're seeing on the Republican side, where you've got this mini rebellion going on amongst some of the influential voices within and without the party. That John McCain, who is the front runner right now, is not conservative enough, and there's this fear that the Republicans, which are the conservative party, will end up being led by somebody who is not elected by a majority of the conservatives within the party. Instead, it's more moderates and independents who seem to be pushing McCain. But there is also this kind of a moderating, and I mean that more temperamentally than politically, a moderating effect where you start realizing, who is the person, regardless of certain the fact that he may not be pure on the issues, is this individual the person who can make the best case for our party broadly and win in November?
Right.
So I mean, I think even the average voter within the party recognizes that tension as well.
I guess, but Robert, is it right that in an election where there were three real candidates yesterday, Romney, Huckabee, and McCain, or on Tuesday, you got some states where McCain got not that much more than a third of the vote, and he gets 100% of the delegates?
In the Republican Party, the Republicans have their way of looking at that tension is they feel it is more important to have a definite result and have a more streamlined process. I mean, the capital D Democratic Party wants their process to be lowercase d more democratic, and so they've gone to this proportional representation model across the basically nationwide. And the downside of that is if you have two strong popular candidates with lots of money, that means you're going to have a very extended process, and that's what you've got.
Really, the two party. I love how the two parties are so much like themselves.
That's exactly right.
The Democrats are total chaos, and the Republicans are with us or against us. So we'll continue in a minute with our three guests as we ask, was Super Tuesday good for democracy? And we'll begin with a caller who wants to question the role of superdelegates. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our online video picks for this week are up. They are political, and they include Hillary Clinton catching Barack Obama, fudging his position a bit on single-payer health care. Also include Bill Clinton falling asleep at a Martin Luther King Day event. It's Bill Clinton's I Have a Dream speech, you might say. As we ask right now, was Super Tuesday good for democracy? Oh, our video picks are at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Benjamin Barber, senior fellow at the New York think tank Demos. David Epstein, political science professor at Columbia. Robert George from the New York Post editorial board, and his blog, Ragged Thoughts, asking the question, was Super Tuesday, is our primary nominating system good for democracy? Merrill in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Merrill.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
My concern is about these superdelegates. I live in Fort Greene in Brooklyn. Our district overwhelmingly went for Barack Obama, yet my congressman, Ed Towns, is a superdelegate for Hillary Rodham Clinton already. And I find this sort of unfair. I mean, he should be voting according to what his constituents want, not what he's decided is in his own best interest or in Hillary's best interest because she is a senator from New York. And I just have a question about this and don't think that it's quite fair. And I want to understand why they can commit before they even knew that Barack Obama was going to be,
the nominee or not,
candidate.
Or so popular in his district. Yeah. David Epstein, the role of the superdelegate.
Right. Well, they were brought in as a way to try to bring the party back into the process a little, to give party leaders a little more control. Now, technically, even though he's announced that he's going to support Hillary, he is not yet a committed delegate. He's still technically uncommitted. And so when you count delegates right now, some people use those announcements, some not. A candidate will be
over. And let me jump in on that, because my understanding is while he has publicly endorsed Hillary Clinton, anybody who is a superdelegate is not, as you say, formally pledged, so that if there's a lot of horse trading that starts around the time of the convention, then they can go either way at that time.
Yes, that's correct. So if, you know, we've never had to talk about this for years and years, but if we enter the convention where somebody doesn't have a majority of committed delegates, and they say, well, these superdelegates will put me over the top, we still have to vote at the convention.
Right.
So they could, they can still change.
But nonetheless, Benjamin Barber, he is a Hillary Clinton supporter, and he automatically gets a seat at the table.
Well, then back up for a minute, because the whole point of the superdelegates is to honor a different part of the representative tradition. One part is that people have their own voice heard, and the lady from her district in Brooklyn voted for Obama. That's great. But the other part is that our elected delegates don't just owe us, as Edmund Burke said, an echo, but they owe us their wisdom and their judgment. And the superdelegates are a way for the party to say, well, the people have spoken, but we who are responsible for the continuity of the party also have a voice. We have to think about what's good, not for Hillary and not for Brooklyn or even the senator from New York, but what's good for the party. And this gives a voice to that long-term thinking about the real interests of the Democratic Party. Because one of the problems with the primaries generally is that they are biased towards the base, and the base is on both sides much more liberal and much more conservative than the general electorate. So what happens is there's a tendency to vote for candidates. This is how a McGovern or a McCarthy or others get, put forward, or now we're seeing Huckabee and so on, that the extremes of the party vote in the primaries, and they vote for candidates who are not really particularly suitable for the general election, or they force a lot of hypocrisy. So McCain, who obviously is more towards the center and is probably a pretty good general election candidate, is outraging his base, some of them saying they're not going to vote for him, they'd rather vote for Hillary, in the way that some Obama supporters are saying they're not going to vote for a Democrat if Obama doesn't get it. So these superdelegates are a moderating and tempering effect on the party that I think has a real role.
Catherine in Babylon, you're on WNYC. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I'm an American Studies college teacher. And as the founders declared, educated participation is essential to democracy.
Educated participation.
Yes. And this is my third presidential contest as a college teacher at Old Westbury College on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
And my students are demonstrating unprecedented interest and participation in this primary season.
What do you think is responsible for their unprecedented interest?
Well, I think it is two things. Obviously, the candidates, and I would take, I would think that it's mostly pro-Obama, but there are also, there's a lot of discussion.
So mostly the candidates, but anything about Tuesday?
But yes, and then I also think that, it's the super aspect. It's, the Super Tuesday, that it's an event that there's, that, it becomes, in a sense, the kind of, big event that they are interested in. I think that that has been, a big part of it as well. And, my students have had, extended discussions about, who are these delegates anyway? How are they selected? Why are they counted differently in different states and by different parties? And the big one, you know, is the delegate counts and the Electoral College, you know, even Democratic in the first place.
A lot of suspicion about whether they're Democratic in the first place to use delegates. So here's a post on our comments page that says, I say bring on the popular vote. Let's just count up every single vote, and whoever has the most vote wins. The delegate system is not democratic. Robert George, maybe we should just do that.
I don't know. I think that similar to the Electoral College, not to throw in just another controversial element in there, but similar to the Electoral College process, I think having a balance between, for want of a better phrase, kind of popular will and expertise, if you will, professional expertise, is not necessarily a bad thing, because I mean I think if you look to see how the founding fathers created the larger electoral system, and in certain ways, and I'm stretching a little bit, but in certain ways, the nominating processes and so forth have something of a mirror of that. You don't want the founding fathers thought that, you know, pure democracy by itself is not a good thing, because it's harder to make decisions.
And back then they went so far as to have members of the House of Representatives elect the members of the Senate. Do I have that right?
House of Representatives was always popularly elected, but the members of the Senate were elected by state legislatures.
State legislatures, that's what it is. And it was what, David Epstein?
I was saying that it used to be that the presidential nominees from each party were nominated by their House delegations. Uh-huh. There was no primaries, nothing. Those were the party leaders.
So Benjamin Barber, why not just throw out this whole delegate system, have a national primary for each party, and let the Democrats of America and the Republicans of America and the Libertarians of America and anyone else nominate their candidates?
Well, the simplest answer is because it will never happen. That's why not. But, you know, whether it's ideal in some utopian world, maybe. But I think we have to try to get the system we have to work rather than to talk about systems that may look great on the academic level but are simply not going to happen. This electoral process suffers, and the whole American primary process and electoral system suffers from a fundamental problem that's built into our system. It's called federalism. The fact is, we live in a federalized country where everything's decentralized. States make their own rules, even about the general elections, not just about the primary elections, which means we are, to some extent, at the at the risk and prey of the states that make their own rules. So, some would say that's more democratic. That gives the states a say, and the people are closer to the states than the federal government. But in a decentralized, federalized system this way, we've seen states like Michigan and Florida say go to hell to the Democratic National Committee, mm-hmm. and do it their own way and take the risk of maybe not having their delegates counted down the way. So federalism is the obstacle that can't be removed, and we're going to have to figure out a system that takes that into account, and it will never be a national primary because of that.
Diana in, is it Freehold, Diana?
No, it's Frieden, New Jersey.
Oh, Frieden. Hi, Diana.
Hi. I had a couple points, and just in the interest of transparency, like the other callers, I'm a former Republican, now an independent Clinton supporter. And I watched the Iowa caucuses, and I was fascinated by democracy in action. But I was also disappointed to see kind of the strong-arming and the peer pressure that happened. And I think when I watched that, I said, you know, for people who have strong and are strong and passionate and can stand on their own, that's great. But for people who maybe really want to vote in a certain direction and can't or feel pressured, I don't think that's what the founding mm-hmm. fathers had in mind. I think the anonymity of the polling booth is kind of a sacred thing, and I was disappointed by it.
Diana, thank you. Benjamin Barber, primaries or caucuses? The caucuses, you know, the people don't have anonymity, you have to go. And I think on the Republican side in Iowa, maybe they did have anonymity. But on the Democratic side, you had to stand up in a group of people, you know, this part of the room for Clinton supporters, this part of the room for Obama supporters, etc. And then there is this cajoling that takes place. And, you know, Kucinich said his delegates should vote for Obama on the second round and all this stuff. What about the anonymity and in a larger sense, the question of caucuses or primaries?
Well, the caller just made the most powerful argument for the secret ballot. I mean, the secret ballot was designed, even though in some ways it's less democratic, citizens don't have to defend their views, they can vote their prejudices in private, which, as we know, they often do. But on the other hand, it insulates them from the kind of cajolery and peer pressure and so on that's around in the campaign. And in this campaign, where I think on both sides of the aisle, we have seen some very real pressure coming from the zealous supporters of one or another candidates, whether it's George or whether it's Huckabee or whether it's Obama, a kind of pressure that says, if you don't vote for me, there's something wrong with you, and a kind of peer pressure. There, the secret ballot does allow people to vote their conscience. The other side of that is that it also allows them to vote their prejudices. They don't have to defend how they're voting. And as the caller said, if you're passionate and articulate, you can do that in a group. If you're not, you may be steamrolled.
So we've only got about 2 minutes left. We have been through primaries or caucuses, proportional allocation of delegates or winner-take-all, moving so many primaries this early or not. Within the realm of what's realistically possible, if you had to make one change to the nominating system for the next time around, I'll go around the room and ask what each of you would do. David Epstein?
It's a tough one. I would say move more to a regional series of primaries, and it doesn't have to be geographical regions. You can mix different geographies, big and little states, but find a way to not give a few states such a big influence. I don't think retail politicking is an essential requirement of being president these days.
You know what? I want to sneak in one more call because it's a really interesting question that follows up on something that came up. Mike in Hohokus, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I was just saying that I will actually watch the convention this year because it hasn't really already been decided. And other years I have not watched it, and I just think it's better to not have your candidate when you enter the convention.
Uh-huh. So you're saying, and we'll be broadcasting from both the Democratic and Republican conventions, by the way, but yeah, Mike's question, Ben Barber, and this will be your last comment, why is Howard Dean so worried about a brokered convention?
Well, because the American election shouldn't become American Idol. This is not a popularity contest in the easy sense. This is not about who makes the easy impression. Answering your question, though, very specifically and quickly, we ought to foreshorten the primary period. It should be 3 months, not a year, and we ought to federally fund it so people are on an equal basis with respect to funding. Those fundamental changes, rather than all the kind of jiggering with the institutions, to me, would really help the system a lot.
Robert George, 30 seconds. You'll get the last word.
I do like the idea of a regional, maybe four or five regional primaries. I think that's not a bad idea. And I think a brokered convention, while it could be chaotic on either side, it's not going to be American Idol because, first of all, you're not going to be having call-ins from all around the country. You are going to have the most committed parts of the party there coming to a decision as to who they think should be their standard bearer, and they will have to balance both ideology and pragmatic concerns.
Well, they're on to Louisiana and Washington State and where else? One other this weekend. And then the Potomac primary next Tuesday, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. As the nominating process marches on, we've been asking, is it good for democracy? With Benjamin Barber from Demos, David Epstein from Columbia University, Robert George from the blog Ragged Thoughts and the New York Post. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, the 200th anniversary of the Abyssinian Baptist Church.